It's the Agribusiness Report. Could Congress be corrupting ad hoc programs? Frank Lucas from Oklahoma is a former chairman of the House Ag Committee.
By lowballing the funding of these programs in the funding process by the rest of Congress and the request from administrations, then we don't have enough dollars to make the programs function properly. And that's when you slide into this emergency relief program type stuff. We should not have to do this. We should address crop insurance and price protection straight up in the regular farm bill process, properly funded, and then we'd all know what the rules are for the next 5 years. We could all play by the rules, and we wouldn't have to go down and take a $50 spit test so we could prove that somebody in our genetic pool was classified as a minority by USDA so we could qualify. That's corrupting the programs and corrupting people.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Dan Hallstrom. Dan's with the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Hey, great to see you.
Likewise. Thanks, Tony.
Well, we see each other usually at least once a year, and that's at CattleCon and Cattle Industry Convention, NCBA Trade Show. Why is this such an important event for USMEF?
Well, it's a great opportunity for us to come together with the beef industry and you know, share their concerns, share our concerns, and collaborate. Because really, when you talk about the work that we do, it's really a partnership with the cattle industry to really maximize that value opportunity back to the supply chain in general.
Talk about a partnership. What about the partnership through USDA's programs like MAP and FMD? How important are those?
Well, you know, the industry, the beef checkoff and pork checkoff, for that matter, investments in our industry and in USMEF are extremely important. And what we do is we, over the years, we've been able to leverage that with government dollars, the market access program, MAP, and the foreign market development program, FMD. And this really makes the producer dollars go further in opening up and developing these markets around the world.
Can you open a market sitting at home, or do you really need to go to that market to open it up?
Being in the market, being involved in the market, it's no different than business here. You would never do business with someone that you don't know, right? Or at least not normally. I think that's key. Having a presence, of which we have offices in, 19 regions around the world, about 100 employees outside the U.S., and that complements all the industry offices that are around the world each and every day. So that's what really having that personal relationship, having that personal communication is what helps to build the market over time. And as you know, this last year on beef and pork in 2022 was a record at $19.5 billion of exports. So, I think it's proven that it works pretty well.
Well, we've been watching the price move higher, but on the other side of that, supply dwindling a bit. Is that a concern?
Well, yeah, definitely it's a concern, but maybe not for the same reason a lot of your listeners think. The buyers around the trade, I say buyers, it's really the trade around the world, whether it's Japan or a Korea or a Singapore or a Mexico, they're very savvy. They know the markets. They know that droughts happen. They know that prices go up and prices go down. They also know that supply goes up and down. It's part of the cycle. And they're well aware and have been now for a couple of years that we're going into a down cycle on supply. So for the last 2 years, we've been, as has the industry, been very integrated with these customers talking about, hey, the next few years are going to be tough. So we need to talk about some other options. You're not going to have enough short plates in Japan because production is down 5% this last year. And they get that. So their first question is, what are the other alternatives? This is the beauty of the situation, making a stressful situation into a constructive one by saying, well, maybe you can use some of the round, the knuckles, the inside, some of the more underutilized parts of the carcass. And this has been extremely effective. It's not ideal. They'd rather have 5% more plates, but it is what it is. And they know that eventually we'll come out of that. So this is the time when we're in the downside of the cycle to go ahead and try to create new supply chain channels with new products. And then when we come out of the situation where we do have more production, there's more options for our customers globally.
Is it safe to say that I think we focus some, the industry has, or at least talked about demand destruction because the price is getting too high. But is it kind of safe to assume we've created a product that people want, even at any price?
Well, yeah, I do think that that's the goal, and I think we've done that. Maybe not in every market around the world, but in a lot of them. I would say that we're in a period of demand construction. And the reason I say that is, I'll give you an example. Mexico and Central America this past year, which have actually been up markets for U.S. beef, it wasn't that long ago where when products reached a certain price, they stopped buying. Well, that was not the case this last year. They kept buying U.S. beef, whether the choice cutout was 270 or 305. So that tells me places like Mexico, Guatemala, places that were very, very price sensitive just 4 or 5 years ago, are now starting to understand the value involved of the quality. And, you know, they don't want to pay more money for it, but they understand why they are. So I think when you get to where the first question is, why can't I get more supply, versus the first question, why is the price so high, I think we've succeeded in telling the value story.
So U.S. Meat Export Federation, obviously, beef, but you also have pork. You also have lamb in there as well. What did those markets look like, or those industries look like last year?
Well, 2023 was a very good year on pork. We're not at a record. We will be a record on value, probably not volume, probably be the second largest year ever on volume. But we're going to be $8.2 billion in exports, which will be a record once we get the December data next week. It's broad-based growth. It's not just one market. You've got Mexico set a record on pork in October with 2 months to go. Central America is going to set a record, led by the Guatemalas, Nicaraguas, El Salvadors of the world, Panama. But there's other, you know, Philippines in Southeast Asia. You look at, you know, I already hit Central America, but you look at Japan. Japan had a rough year on beef, but on pork we were up a little bit. So this is the beauty of the situation, is that even though food service is struggling, and it was struggling on pork as well, we still had a fairly good year into the major countries like Korea and Japan on pork. So, yeah, I think not only is 2023 shaping up to be a really good year, but 2024 is looking pretty promising as well going forward.
Okay, so probably the toughest question of all as we look in the crystal ball. Obviously, we're talking about 24, but let's look out later, maybe late 20s, maybe even into the 30s. But when you start looking down the road, are you optimistic? Are you cautious? Are you concerned? A little bit of all.
No, I'm optimistic. I think if you look at the base supply and demand situation globally, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. And, you know, I'll mention a couple of regions. Southeast Asia, the ones I just mentioned. Southeast Asia shows immense capacity for increasing pork today and also beef, but down the road even more so. These middle classes will keep expanding. The spending power will keep expanding over time. I mean, there'll be ups and downs, but over time, the spending power is going to increase. We haven't even talked about Africa. You know, 1.5 billion people and the youngest demographic on the planet. That's another part of the world that, and I'm not talking about just Egypt, but I'm talking about Angola, Nigeria, Benin, Gabon, South Africa. There's many, many places in Africa that will be on the radar. And if you say in 5 to 10 years' time, when you're sitting here talking to whoever kicks me out and wants to do this job, I said, you're going to be talking a lot about Africa, because that young demographic is going to get into the spending power category in the next 3 to 5 years.
I said it was the last question, but it really makes me wonder, because all of these are exports, and unless we're talking about Mexico or maybe Canada, we're going to have to put it on a ship at this point. Has there been any concerns with transportation issue, infrastructure issues over the past few months, and do you see any of that in 24?
Well, yeah, I think supply chain, we had a real test of the supply chain post-COVID in 2020, so that hopefully that's an anomaly we'll never have to go back to. But if you look at certain regions of the world, yeah, we have continuing supply chain concerns. Gaza, Israel, and the Red Sea area stands out. And while that's relatively new in terms of the disruptions, you know, that Red Sea area for distribution through Europe, Africa, South Europe, can be impactful. Not that we sell that much product there, but these supply chains are global. They make a loop. You know, you don't just go within Africa. They go around the world. And so eventually, if this goes on for any length of time, there will be some implications. And when you have disruptions or they start, for now, instead of going through the Red Sea, going all the way around the Cape, you know, through South Africa back up, you know, that not only does that add costs, but inefficiencies into the system. So we need to keep an eye on it. To answer your question, yeah, it's always on my mind, but as long as there's no global disruption like COVID, I think it can be dealt with relatively easily.
Dan, always great to see you. We wish you the best in 24 and looking forward to hearing this great update when we meet next year in 25.
Thank you, Tony. My pleasure.
Dan Hallstrom is President and CEO, U.S. Meat Export Federation. From the 2024 Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show, I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. President of NCBA, Todd Wilkinson.
There is all sorts of facets that are going to go into this. And again, that's why I think this is such a misnomer to even give this the credibility to talk about it being a meat product. Sure, it comes from a cell, but you're using these immortal cells, and that's what that's the terminology they use to replicate this. And what is happening genetically when all of that goes in there? How do you protect people from that? How is all of the other products that go into the beef, our animals, how is that going to be treated? You know, there's a myriad of questions out here. And unfortunately, this is the wealthy, hoity-toity people that are advocating for this, right? This isn't mom and dad on Main Street or in the country that want this. This is the Bill Gateses of the world and Leonardo DiCaprio's. This is their answer to where they think they want us to go. Well, that's not what America wants. And frankly, that's not what the world wants. So I give credit to a country like Italy that has already banned all of this stuff. And there's a number of states that are aggressively looking to pass legislation to keep this stuff out of the market.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members, our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Dan Hallstrom with the U.S. Meat Export Federation.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton, the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Deputy Secretary of USDA, Social Torres Small.
USDA has been working to make the way we lend different for a while. And so this is the most recent of a few tools that have been created. So the first one was that simplified direct loan paper application. Some folks still prefer a paper application. And so we wanted to make it shorter. And FSA was able to take it from 29 pages to 13 pages. Then in talking with farmers, we heard them say that there's just so many products out there, don't always know where to start. What's the right loan for me? And so FSA developed a loan assistance tool that helps provide customers with an interactive online step-by-step guide to identify the direct loan products that might be the right fit for their business needs. So that's also available at farmers.gov. And then most recently, I announced the online loan application. So in addition to now paying for their loan online, they can even apply for their loan online. Now, all of this is on top of our service centers. You can walk into an FSA office and receive the same support as well, whether it's identifying which loan to apply for, whether it's applying, or whether it's making your regular payments.